This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
I'm Mike Beats.
And tonight we are going to do drugs. this is the topic for November, December, and we thought we would discuss this in some detail. We probably will talk about a few other things as well over the next 45 minutes or so. We already started talking about things. Mr. Cruz has a tournament, a small tournament coming up this weekend that he is trying to prepare for, and we're giving him expert, albeit conflicting advice on what he should do. So we shall see how that's going. I'll ask the question, are you ready for the tournament, John?
I think I'm pretty ready. Each year it seems to get easier, even though it gets larger.
Can I ask you why I haven't gotten 100 emails from you? I'm very upset because I usually get 100 emails
by now. They'll come. I think that having more things be automated this year will prevent getting 100 emails from me. But they'll come.
Okay. Well, we're all looking forward to it.
I stopped by Japonica earlier today to get any final things for the round robin. Should be good.
Yeah. This is the thing. If you're listening to this and you're young and foolish, what you want to do is get invited to the round robin in the future, because Mr. Cruz does provide a wonderful dinner at a Japanese restaurant that is unrivaled. And it's pretty much all-you-can-eat sushi. And,
indeed.
I've seen teenagers, and they can eat a lot of all-you-can-eat. So it's quite an event. Okay, so anyhow, like I said, we're going to talk about the drug topic. Does anybody know the wording of the topic offhand?
No,
we are.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah, we're so. This is real professional.
We are so well prepared.
Resolve that we need more Snickers bars at the concessions.
Okay,
I'm just telling you all something.
All right, I'm looking it up here.
How fast can somebody find this? Becomes
I've got
question.
It.
Okay, we got it.
Resolve. The abuse of illegal drugs ought to be treated as a matter of public health, not of criminal justice.
Okay, the abuse. So it has to be the abuse of drugs. Abuse of
illegal.
Drugs is not, abuse of illegal drugs is not like being a drug dealer. It's actually
well.
It can be extended to that, but it is, I mean, to me, if someone is a drug abuser, it's not the mafia selling heroin and Marlon Brando getting pissed off about it. It is somebody using something. Drug abuse is what we call the use of drugs. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go on with what you're saying, Chris.
Does the word abuse therefore mean things like medical marijuana of outer bounds?
That's where we have. That's what I think is a big thing.
I mean, medical marijuana. I mean, strikes me as something that would not be an abuse because I have a theoretical prescription. It's a drug I'm taking for a disease, and someone has, a doctor said take this drug. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of drugs stronger, more powerful, more dangerous than marijuana that people take for various diseases. I mean, chemotherapy is a lot more dangerous than smoking marijuana, but
I think this is somewhat debatable. I think that the term
abuse
is highly loaded. I think that it's also a very moralizing word that's used by a lot of different people with a lot of different agendas when it comes to drugs, and I think that that's an area that debaters need to explore.
Yeah, I mean, there's medical marijuana use that a doctor did not prescribe, and does use of an illegal drug constitute abuse on face?
I mean, on the legal book, if I take a prescription drug that I do not have a script for, that's drug abuse. I can't sell prescription drugs to somebody.
I don't know if that's drug abuse.
I'm just saying in the legal sense it is. I mean, in the legal
sense, it is.
Is abuse a legal term?
I don't even think. I think that would just be drug use. That would just be illegal drug use.
Maybe it's all right. Forget the word abuse. You'll go. You can be arrested for it. Let's put it that way.
Could I use cocaine once a week in my home by myself, not hurt anyone? Am I abusing cocaine?
According to the law, you are subject to arrest.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're abusing.
Are you abusing it? No, you're probably using it the way it was meant to be used. So,
well, there's that.
But
well,
I mean,
do a lot of cleaning.
I'm going to do a little search and see what it says for drug abuse.
Yes, well, I'm looking up the DSM. The DSM definition of it. The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that's used to define psychological disorders by the American Psychiatric Association.
I'm looking at just a Google search brings me things like the National Institute on Drug Abuse.
Yeah.
Substance abuse, also known as drug abuse, refers to a maladaptive pattern of use of a substance that is not considered dependent. Goes on and on. So, I mean, it's a term of art, if nothing else, that this is when you're using drugs you're not supposed to be doing drugs you're not supposed to be doing is drug abuse.
Well, this is interesting. The DSM definition is very similar language, a maladaptive pattern of substance abuse leading to clinically significant impairment or distress as manifested by a bunch of conditions. And one of the conditions, this is funny, is recurrent substance-related legal problems. And so it does hinge on the law in a way that psychological disorders almost never do.
I mean, according to that definition, then I could, you know, theoretically, in some definition, abuse aspirin, but since it doesn't cause
we
any problems,
about this, the aspirin, yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't cause any problems. So the drug itself has to have some oomph to it, let's say, that causes, you know, the negative results that you describe in the definition. So
well,
it can't just be any drug.
And the other conditions are it basically has to get in the way of your life, work, school, whatever, family. It has to. It may cause physically hazardous situations, like you're driving while drunk, and it has to continue, basically, despite having persistent or recurring social or interpersonal problems. So it has to recur to be.
I wouldn't be arguing alcoholism, but it is like alcohol. It's analogous to alcoholism here because. Yeah, alcoholism is something that has all those effects. It hurts your life. It makes it hard for you to live your life. People know it. You can get into trouble with the law, so forth and so on. So it's, you know, absolutely analogous to that as compared to orange juice abuse. Probably isn't going to have a lot of effect. Yeah. You know?
So abuse almost has to imply in some sense, I think, that it hurts your life in some way. If you manage to somehow do an illegal drug and it, either in the case of medical marijuana, helps you or doesn't affect you too much, does that? I don't think that rises to the abuse. That doesn't. It's not topical.
Well, medical marijuana, according to this, would not be an illegal drug. If in fact.
What if you're just self-medicating though?
Yeah. You don't have to have a prescription.
But, I mean, self-medicating is a nice way of saying you're a doper, you know?
Not necessarily.
1975?
Hard that, please.
Wow.
Okay, I obviously am talking to a lot of people who self-medicate.
No. But, I mean, there
are
people...
They hang out with the greasers.
I mean, there are people who will be taking medical marijuana without informing their doctor, but they are suffering from a condition that it helps, you know?
But, okay, I mean, I don't think we're not going to be strongly going there to find arguments, are we? And looking at legalizing drugs or anything like that. I mean, we were talking a little bit about this over the weekend. I was talking to Joe Vaughn, and as people may know, Joe is on the committee, and I was, you know, sort of picking his brain about this, and John was there too when we were talking
That's
about
true.
This, if I'm not mistaken. We were just talking about some of the things that the topic will not be about is like legalizing drugs, because at the point where you legalize the drugs, they're not illegal drugs anymore. Yeah, so it's counter intuitive and also counter to the resolution. I mean, it is illegal drugs, and making like the thinnest possible argument that some places marijuana is legal and some places marijuana isn't illegal, and basing all your argumentation on that would be pretty crummy debating, I think.
Well, that's why I think the word abuse is important, because this implies a, you know, person whose life is in shambles because of drugs, not somebody who's, you know, just toking up on the side because they're under chemotherapy or have glaucoma or something.
Yeah. I'll quote what Joe was saying. We tried to get Joe, by the way, tonight, but he caught the Monticello flu from being up in Monticello. He isn't feeling well because he did want to be with us. And what he was saying was that the committee was trying to find a topic that was going to put into conflict the government being stern and versus being paternalistic. It was how the government could be paternalistic. So the idea that if the government is doing, making it a matter of public health, they're taking care of you. And so what responsibility, and now I'm putting in more the words, what responsibility does the government have toward people to take care of them versus to punish them because they just did something wrong and go take care of yourself kind of thing. That to me is a very interesting way of thinking about the topic because, when you think about it that way, it sort of makes sense. How much can we turn to the government to be our stern parent and take care of us when we sort of stray as compared to just punishing us and say, don't do that? That was a conversation stopper.
Well, yeah, and it does break down rather neatly on a sort of traditionalist liberal conservative line where the stereotype of the liberal is let me help you get over your addiction, and the stereotype of the conservative would say lock them away and throw away the key. So,
yeah. But why do the underlying rationale for the government taking any sense of responsibility? I don't know if that's the right word, but the government saying that it's their job. Because if we say that drug abuse, okay, we're saying illegal drugs, drug abuse, that's a bad thing. Let's leave it at that. Let's not try to make it a good thing. And okay, so we're going to take drug abuse, whatever that is. We're going to take all the crackheads or whatever. And instead of saying, well, you're making this neighborhood a disaster, there's crime everywhere and petty theft and so forth and so on, instead of treating you like criminals, we're going to treat you like sick people. And we are going to try to cure the disease that causes you to do this and prioritize. Obviously, you have to prioritize the curing over the elimination of the crime that goes with it. That does call to a very deep-seated liberal idea, but it also isn't necessarily the best way to handle things. It's not terribly practical.
Yeah, and there's other problems with it, too. Complaints that people have about the criminalization of drugs, those problems could actually be worsened if you turn it into a medical situation. Just from a due process perspective, I think that people... Once it's out of the hands of the criminal justice system and in the hands of a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and you're in a mental health facility, you're sort of like at the whim of your doctor saying, "Oh, he's okay." Otherwise, sort of indefinitely, you can be put in jail because you are not normal, or not in jail you could be incarcerated because you're just not normal, right? Or you have not convinced the whoever's in charge of saying that you can now leave incarceration and because you don't fit whatever standard they have for that. So whereas if you go to jail, you do your time, then you're out of jail.
Okay. Can we all say Foucault now in unison?
Yes, I know.
Anybody who – what Mike says is very true, very important, and the Foucault material is going to be where to go for that support on that, because Foucault talks about how do you decide if somebody is crazy and how do you decide if somebody should go to jail. He has different books on this.
Right, yeah.
And, these are, crazy especially, if somebody is sick, we decide somebody is sick because whoever is deciding that they're sick isn't feeling the same way as that person who we say they're sick. And that's how it happens. It's a very complex thing, but Foucault is very useful on this. And we've talked about Foucault, at least offline. And Foucault is one of the recent people, one of the 20th century people, who is very important to know and to understand and to read carefully. He's not easy, but he's not hard in terms of being able to read him. You can pick up his stuff and read it, and your brain doesn't fall out, So it's worth taking a look at if those kind of arguments are appealing.
In particular, the Birth of the Clinic is one that is aimed nearly directly at this issue. So,
yeah, I think you know, there's probably it's similar to the juvenile justice topic, where once it's out of the criminal justice system for the problems that it has, it does provide you a sense of due process that you know, other more "we're here to help you" sorts of things actually aren't better than what the criminal justice system can do, because at least there you have some sense of due process and protections for the person that's being charged. That you know, that if you're not being charged with anything, well, then you don't have, there's no need for due process, and so then they're just there to be more paternal with you, and that can be dangerous as well.
But the problem with the due process is there are so many laws on the books that pretty much if we process somebody under these laws, we're sending people to jail that should not be going to jail. Now, I talked about this when we went through this topic originally, and I just posted some stuff, so it will be in the notes here. But just some anecdotal stuff and some statistics. There's one of my favorite blogs, a PAP blog by this guy named Spagnoli. And he talks about, the United States, just looking at the figures, just looking at the prison figures of the United States, we have so many more people in prison per capita than any other country. We're just off the charts. And we have, there's something wrong. Either everybody else is wrong and we're right because we've got the right number of criminals, but we have 1 in 100 people in this country, adults, are in prison. And this is way up. It used to be something like 1 in 200 only like 20 or 30 years ago. So we're really, unemployment is up and the number of people in prison is up. The economy is going to hell, but we managed to get more people in prison. And a lot of it is based on these kinds of, we have passed laws, we have put laws on the books, the three strikes you're out laws, in New York, and I don't know where these laws stand now, but I remember them being suggested that anybody caught with drugs, the misdemeanor of the old days was going to be a felony, things like that, that this was somehow going to deter drug use. Didn't
I think
work.
That was the big criticism of the Rockefeller laws in New York, which I actually think are a good thing for people to examine, no matter what state they live in, because there's a lot of literature on the Rockefeller laws and drugs, and getting harsh and very intense with treating drugs as a matter of crime.
Yeah, well, if all these laws were meant as deterrence, the fact that the number of people in prison has gone up exponentially pretty much disproves deterrence, if anyone needed to disprove deterrence.
There are a lot of external impacts there too. California has a very punitive three strikes law, and it's a giant part of their complete budgetary disaster they've got going right now is the prison expenses that are on the books that they can't do anything about because it was passed by referendum.
Yeah, that's right. I read an interesting statistic, I think in Reasons Magazine blog. It's I'll see if I can find it, but it said something along the lines that while and this doesn't have to do with illegal drugs, but it has to do with our system of it had to do with drunk driving. And it said, let's see here, it says, even that since they lowered the drunk driving law to 0.08, the number of arrests for drunk driving has gone up, but the number of so have the number of fatal accidents. Because lawmakers, police officers, are spending more time just pulling people over, doing the checkpoints, as opposed to looking and seeing who if someone's driving erratically. They're just doing so. The police officer is being taken off of actually getting people that are harming other people, and instead are looking to just enforce this criminal law. So I think that a similar argument could probably be made about criminalization of drugs too, that we spend so many of our resources just going after and victimless drug use, and where we could be, that there's a direct trade-off, especially in budget, when the budget is tight, that there is a direct trade-off of resources between the criminalization and actually going after those criminals. Because I would think, from a debate strategy standpoint, in order for the negative to get the benefits of criminalization, they have to dedicate a lot of resources to that too. otherwise they're not going to gain any of their net benefit of criminalization. So, you know, there's probably really good arguments and good statistics about how much is just, you know, where the trade-off takes place. What are we cutting because we're spending so much time on the war on drugs? What are we not doing because we're doing that?
I want to, the idea of a victimless crime, and I mean this as a serious question now, is heroin addiction a victimless crime?
Well, in one sense, I don't know if that's really germane to the topic, because the topic assumes that these drugs are illegal. It doesn't really speak to the question of legalization, and I don't know if victimlessness really adheres there.
Well, I'm just saying, if it's victim, well, the fact that it's victim, there is no victim aside from maybe the person themselves, because crime and retributive justice is retribution. You know, I mean, so everything right. in the criminal justice system is retribution for something. So if it's a victimless crime, why is there retribution? Because who has been harmed? Only the person themselves.
Well, not necessarily, because the more serious a drug you get, the more you get into negative externalities. You know, where there is heavy heroin usage, there are dead parents.
The production of the drug itself is...
Yeah. Afghanistan.
Well, even if, let's say, I want to do meth, and I keep using myself as an example, but let's say I want to...
We all use you as an example.
Let's say I live in California, and exactly. we're all... So, let's say I want to cook up some meth, and I want to do it in my apartment. I could do that safely for a while, but with every time I do it, I am putting other people at risk, right? I mean, I can go legally buy all the ingredients for meth. I don't have to steal from anyone. I don't have to lie. I don't have to... I just need to be able to cook it up myself, right? But I am putting everyone in my apartment complex at risk because of, you know, the potential of there being an explosion or something like that, right? So even though I don't actually harm anyone, I am putting everyone else at risk unknowingly. And I don't know how many drugs you can actually... I guess there's probably a few drugs. What about like mushrooms and things like that you could do without harming anyone? You don't really put anyone at risk. And if you just sit in your house, I suppose there are things that are victimless. And there's a difference between me doing it, you know, by myself or with some friends in my apartment, being a single person that doesn't have any responsibility, or me doing it and I have kids, you know.
Again, but those become arguments more for legalization than for treatment. But by the same token, I can look at it some ways. Well, you probably shouldn't be doing this because it's not good for you. And so does the government have the right, the much less the obligation, to straighten you out from all that drug use in your apartment that's addling your brain despite what you think? I mean, that's the question.
Does the government have the right, therefore, to discourage alcohol addiction or cigarette use?
I think
because those both have huge public externalities as well, you know?
They certainly take that right in tobacco and to some mm-hmm. extent in alcohol.
Yeah, with taxes at the very least.
Issues, if not, you know, exactly the same.
I mean, at the very least, they punitively tax both of them in order to try to discourage people to using them.
And they require you to wear seatbelts. They don't let you, you know, they do things that are almost purely just to protect you from yourself.
Secondhand smoke is, you know, we can't smoke anywhere in public. I mean, I don't know how people who smoke anymore because there's nowhere you can do it. I mean, it's amazing how many places, I mean, just don't, I mean,
that's true. Mm-hmm.
And the stigma that has gone on to smokers now, not only do they have to stand outside when it's 20 degrees below zero and standing in front of the sign that says, don't stand here and smoke, but, I mean, they're exiled out of wherever they are to go to that place. It's a horrible place. They smoke like criminals, and then they go back. So the government has done that. I mean, certainly it's always local governments, but certainly the governments have done that.
You would never criminalize. I don't think that you would ever criminalize. Well, here's the thing: is something, if it's in the criminal justice system, does it have to be something that's criminal?
We've held big tobacco accountable. You know.
Well, for example, if I just argued that no, it shouldn't, we shouldn't take it out of the criminal justice system, but it should no longer be a felony; they should just be misdemeanors with fines.
I think that's fair ground for the negative. And on the other hand, too, with
light
the
light brown, but it may be all that the negative has to do. I mean, it certainly also solves a lot of the problems.
On the affirmative, too, isn't there a there's a bit of an affirmative burden here to prove that public health measures are more effective and are cheaper or
isn't
whatever.
A misdemeanor still a criminal act?
Yeah, you can go to jail.
Sure.
Right. So, I mean, like, it seems like an intuitive position, but I'm sorry, I might be totally inarticulate. This is like the week of the tournament, inarticulate problem.
Well, one of the things that might solve for is a lot of the racial biases inherent in current drug sentences. If you made
the
every
racial biases,
yeah,
prison overflowing. I mean, those sorts of things that the affirmative will bring up. They'll bring up the problems that are in current with current drug laws. And if the negative just said, "Look, we can solve that problem just by not sending people to jail. We're just going to fine them."
And I don't know if that really solves the problem. That keeps all these drug offenders on the streets and a lot of the problems that go along with it, the attendant problems.
There's no way that the negative can't say, and we should do public health too. We should do both.
Yeah, you can do and. There's no or.
Yeah, I mean, that way they can capture all the affirmative advantages of public health.
Yeah.
And
you wouldn't necessarily even need them on the streets. I mean, if you're knocked off your ass drunk in the middle of a public street, they're going to pick you up for it. I mean, yeah. That has nothing to do with the criminality of the drug itself.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, public drunkenness is a crime, and they will take you and you'll sleep it off. It's a mild
crime. Well, in a lot
crime.
Of places, even just public drinking is a crime. You don't
That's
have
true.
To
I can't, I mean, in the in town, I can't sit in the park.
I can't even drive
office.
Around in my car with a bottle.
Well, no, you can't.
And I'd rather you didn't. Actually, in Louisiana, they have drive-up margarita drive-thru.
Stop it.
They
those
do,
are,
those I
are
swear.
One of the four states that you can have a loaded gun in a bar?
I don't know, but my uncle lives in Baton Rouge, and he can just go to a drive-thru, get like a margarita in a little styrofoam cup, and drive off with it. It's unbelievable.
That's so, awesome.
But sort of back to the actual point, the combination.
Yes, okay.
I mean, if we had a regime, a drug regime that was, you know, you can't do it in the middle of the park in front of children and you get a fine for it, that's very similar to the disincentives we have towards alcohol and cigarette abuse. Again, we put an economic restriction in it and then we try to keep it away from kids who are influenced by it.
Can a negative just do that though? Is that could you can a negative be like it's still going to be illegal and we're still gonna. It's still gonna be an issue of criminal justice, meaning you're still gonna get a warrant, but the penalty for 99% of them is just gonna be a fine.
Well, I think the trouble is yes, in theory, but in actual practice, given the structure in LD round, what you'll have is the affirmative giving one plan, the negative giving a non-clashing plan, and then theory until the round finally dies a miserable death.
About the status quo is negative. I mean, there is so much. I mean, everyone in this country, theoretically, loves the negative. We like to punish these people because of all the things that go on. So the negative has a lot of support here to go a lot further. I'd much rather the negative went further and said, no, these people are breaking the law. Here's what happens when these people break the law, and here's why we have to solve it this way. Yes, these people are sick. Put them in jail and then take care of them. But the priority is to protect the public at large. I mean, because that's what these laws are theoretically doing, is protecting the public at large. Then the criminal can be taken care of. I mean, there's hospitals in the prison or some crap like that they can, you know, help those people. But I mean, I would take a strong position rather than the least position, because otherwise, like Chris says, it just becomes a muddy kind of, then the round is about something else. It's about what the round is about as compared to the content of the round.
That doesn't mean it won't happen, however.
Oh, it'll happen 90% of the time. As
also, one thing that we haven't even discussed is that the resolution isn't specific to the U.S.
Oh, very true. That's interesting. Huh.
But how do you take this out of the U.S.? I mean, all I can ever think of is Turkey and, you know, putting people in jail for smuggling hashish and stuff like that.
Well, you can look at the example of, like, Amsterdam, Holland.
Okay, but they just legalize all the drugs. Then, you know, so I mean, I don't know what they do other than that.
At least. I mean, gives you a baseline for evidence. You know,
I guess. Well, the thing is, I mean, it's worth looking up. I mean, we know that drugs are, I mean, some drugs are legal in Amsterdam. So you go into a bar, for instance, and some, I mean, an alcohol bar, and I gather they also have like drug bars, so it's like marijuana bars, whatever. And so they, you know, this, the drug use is limited to those places. But what happens after that? I mean, where is it not allowed? It's an interesting question. I don't know if I'd really want to argue too much about outside.
Well, the great burning question with legal drugs is how much of the problem with illegal drug use and how many of the negative externalities are because of the drugs and how many of them are because they're illegal. You know, a lot of the distribution network crime-related problems come because they're illegal, not because they're drugs. Right. And with the example of Holland, you can filter that out.
If you look at Time magazine from April 26, 2009,
it's like an extemporound.
Which European country has the most liberal
Believe
drug
that.
Laws?
I love it.
The correct answer is Portugal, which in 2001 became the first European country to officially abolish all criminal penalties for personal possession of drugs, including marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine.
Wow.
I did not know that.
So what's happened since then? He asked.
It's Portugal.
Oh, damn, stop, Portuguese.
My dad
stopped paying attention to them in 1650, and no one's heard from them since. I mean,
there is that line of demarcation we've just...
Here's something. The Cato Institute.
Oh, boy.
Loves this idea, okay. Obviously. Yep. The question is, does the new policy work? At the time, critics... In the poor, socially conservative, and largely Catholic nations, said decriminalizing drug possession would open the country to drug tourists and exacerbate the Portugal's drug problem. The country had some of the highest levels of hard drug use in Europe, but the recently released results of a report commissioned by the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, suggests otherwise. The paper published by Cato in April found that in the 5 years after personal possession was decriminalized, illegal drug use among teens – well, it wouldn't be illegal anymore – illegal drug use among teens in Portugal declined, and rates of new HIV infections caused by sharing of dirty needles dropped, while the number of people seeking treatment for drug addiction more than doubled.
Interesting.
Judging by every metric, decriminalization in Portugal has been a resounding success, says.
I wonder.
But that's
Glenn
the
Green.
The criminalization aspect, which which is almost not the resolution, whether it should be legalized.
Well, but it
sounds like it should be from this.
But the decriminalization takes away the stigma of going to get help, at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, in the real world, that's true.
If the U.S. decriminalizes it, people would not be afraid of getting help, maybe.
But is that an affirmative or a negative argument? Because criminal justice, decriminalizing it is... You know, an issue of criminal justice. We say, okay, it's not going to be criminal anymore.
It would be an F argument because it would still be illegal. You still make it illegal. You just decriminalize it.
How do you make it illegal and decriminalize it?
Well, that's what Massachusetts has for marijuana right now. There was a ballot question in 2008, and if you get caught with less than a certain amount of marijuana, I don't know how much, but basically the dividing line between a dealer and a user, they take it away from you, they fine you $100, and it doesn't go on your record, and that's the end of it.
So it's like a violation, in other words.
Yeah, it's a parking ticket is more or less what it is. Yeah,
that's the other, as far as I know, there's three things. You have violations, misdemeanors, and felonies. And a violation, there's no... particular record of it at all.
Yeah. You can have your ounce of marijuana, get fined for it, go a block, pick up another ounce, get fined for it by the same policeman 16 times, and it still will never rise above that. Yeah.
Well, you should look behind you and see if he's following you.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well,
if you're doing that much drugs, you know, you probably don't need, all right, let's go to the next block. You know.
Okay. I just did if you just look up decriminalization versus legalization. The drug policy forum in Texas says decriminalization is a system that punishes offenses by means other than prison. Fines for most traffic violations, for example, in relation to drugs, it is normally limited to possession and sometimes growth of small amounts, often around 1 ounce, and sometimes to sale of equally small amounts to adults. It is often limited to marijuana among the illegal drugs. Legalization, a system that allows for the use and sale of drugs to adults under a system of regulation such as pertains to alcohol or perhaps involving licenses.
But our real problems with drugs in this country are not marijuana-based. I mean, they are heroin-based right, cocaine.
But that's
based.
Just to bring up the distinction between legalization, which once you legalize it, it's no longer affirmative ground. It's irrelevant to the debate. But to decriminalize means that you can still keep it illegal. It's just there's not criminal penalties.
You make an awful fine point for a debate round, though, that... that's what it boils down to.
I kind of think that's actually pretty core affirmative ground, where you're basically removing the fangs of the threat of prison from the matter and instead saying we're going to treat this with an eye towards reducing the negative public health impact.
I mean, I would just have to, my response to that, I mean, this is just intuitive, but that sounds to me like you're dealing with this through the criminal justice process by eliminating the criminal justiceness of it. So what you're taking is you're changing the laws. So at the point where you're changing the laws to make this happen, that's all you're doing is changing the laws and hoping for the best. That seems to me like you're taking a negative stance. You're changing the laws. You're doing something.
No, I don't think you're just changing the law. Right. I think you're saying is that the change in the law is necessary but not sufficient for the affirmative.
Who administers violations? In other words, who issues your violation?
In Mass, it's the local police. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you go to the police
station. So why is that not a matter? All I'm curious about is
it's like a parking ticket.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, that's really
a rhetorical question because all I'm really trying to get at is I want to know why that's not criminal justice.
Because it's in tandem with a public health effort. If you say, look, if we keep these things to be a felonious crime, then needle exchange programs don't work and other public health efforts don't work and people don't come in for treatment. So therefore, in order to enable a effective public health regime, you therefore have to tone down the criminal justice implications and penalties for committing for using illegal drugs.
I don't know. I'm reading the resolution again, and it says that the abuse of illegal drugs ought to be treated as a matter of public health, not of criminal justice. You know, if the affirmative can argue that for the most part it should be of public health, does that mean that the affirmative has to say that? But if the affirmative says legalize, I'm working through this in my head right now, so I'm inarticulate. But if the affirmative says legalize drugs,
then it's out of
then the resolution. it's no longer the abuse of illegal drugs.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
But if the affirmative keeps it illegal, then it is an issue of criminal justice.
Right. And this is where
So what can the affirmative say?
There needs to be a winning conflict in here somewhere, and there isn't. Yeah.
what can the affirmative say? Because if it is, does that mean that a police officer, instead of going to arrest the person or give the person a ticket, they call an ambulance? I mean, just to be...
This is illegal is the problem. I mean, if it didn't say illegal, then it would be okay, because if it were just the abuse of drugs, blah, 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 then you would be able to say, okay, I'm going to take this stance or that stance. But once you put the word illegal in there, then you have a contradiction that no matter what you do, you're on the wrong side of the resolution.
You either have to argue in favor of, like I said before, if you say legalize drugs because it helps public health, then they're no longer illegal drugs.
And that is it's not even criminal justice anymore because there's nothing going on.
But that would be the only way that you get rid of the criminal justice part is to legalize it.
I think when people are arguing, they're going to have to take the illegal out in their minds. You know, say drug abuse. I know you can't just do it. I mean, but the point where you can
debate has been with theory and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it used to be where in the back in the early 2000s where everyone just sort of had this gentleman's agreement. Sorry if I'm sexist. This debater's agreement that
there's no gentleman.
We're just going to debate what is probably fair to both sides.
Right.
But now you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, then that word illegal is what all the argument would be about. Because, I mean, we keep coming back to it. I mean, that is the conundrum. And it's internal and it's inextricable.
Well, do you think that you could maybe look at this from a sense of governmental intent? Like you say that the purpose of the affirmative is to cast your decisions and make your calls and judgments based on what is best for the public health and not pay attention to matters of criminal justice whatsoever. So you can use the criminal justice system, but the end and the end goal should always be public health and not punishing people for activities which society finds to be morally reprehensible.
That sounds like what Joe was talking about when he was talking about what the framers were had in mind. I mean, not that maybe specifically, but that certainly seems to be in line with that.
So it has to do with the sentencing?
Well, it would have to do with the framework under which you make your decisions. So, like, let's say that if you discovered by putting people who used heroin in jail for 1 year in return for doing so, you reduced, I don't know, cholera, right, or something. Who knows? Or you reduced addiction or you reduced HIV rates. Then it becomes worth it because it's a matter of public health. But your aim is not necessarily to punish people for using heroin. Your aim is to reduce HIV rates.
I mean, the whole dirty needle thing sounds like very promising in there. And you have the evidence from Portugal. So that kind of stuff sounds like something that can be pursued and gives you the public health benefit.
Yeah. And I think you could even argue that decriminalization is in the affirmative world, as it were, where you're trying to just reduce the criminal justice impacts in order to get access to better health, public health advantages.
Is that really what they wanted this resolution to say? It can't possibly be.
I don't know. It's pretty convoluted.
It couldn't possibly be that they wanted to get other public health benefits out. I mean, come on.
I think what actually happened is that they viewed it as illegal drugs and had that in their heads as the set of drugs that are currently illegal. I think that's kind of where this wording came from. It was a whoops, basically, where, you know, we all know what illegal drugs are, right? But and they didn't really consider the revolving nature of that definition.
And then it goes back to the whole thing about, does the government have responsibility for the people? And, I mean, sort of I'm thinking of like a John Mill argument of... you know, how you harm others when you harm yourself, blah, blah, blah. So very old-fashioned kind of thinking, but it doesn't come out of this resolution, but I think it went into coming up with the resolution.
Do you think this resolution would have been more, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but more interesting if it were about a very specific drug, like if it just named a drug and said debate about it for 2 months?
Yeah, if you strike illegal drugs and just say heroin or something.
Right, or marijuana on the opposite extreme.
So yeah. I want to do marijuana, but I'd like heroin or cocaine. You know, something that we know has serious social and physical implications. I mean,
there are arguments for – I mean, I for the sake of full disclosure, I believe that marijuana should not be illegal. But I don't – but I think that there are, there are obviously off-sided arguments and the reasons why marijuana is illegal. I still think
But I think that would turn into an Islamic Center kind of resolution where what you believed, how undebatable you thought it was, depended on where you came from.
Isn't this the topic that when we were discussing 2 weeks ago, Jim was like, how could anyone possibly possibly vote no?
And here we are saying the affirmative is logically impossible, so there you go, right?
Well, let's put it this way. I still don't like the topic, if that's all that matters. Believe me, before we did this, I sat there and I put up, just quickly looked for some evidence on prisons. And, the prison population is ridiculous. What we do in prisons is ridiculous. Anything we could do to not have prisons in this country the way they are now would be a good thing. So if in fact the worst thing in the world would be to go affirmative here, it still helps the prison population. We should do it, because it is ridiculous the amount of money we spend, the amount of effort we spend, the social, the racial implications of our prison system. Is horrible. It's shameful, and nothing ever gets done about it. This could do something about it if, in fact, we stopped criminalizing, stopped punishing people for this, and started making them non-addicts. But there's also social implications to it, and poverty implications to it, and it's all tied together. It's not just the drugs. The drugs are a symptom of the economic problem. So there.
Get off my lawn. Well, on the other hand, on the negative side, the third tentacle. On the negative side here, too, though, is if you treat drugs solely as a matter of public health, then you ignore the effects of the drug addict who neglects his children. or, you know, the social effects.
Child neglect is illegal all on its own. Robbing a bank to get money for drugs. Robbing a bank is illegal.
We're talking to Jim Medical Libertarian now.
There's neglect.
You reminded me that I was doing fine until you reminded me. Jeez.
There's neglect and there's neglect, though. I mean, there's certainly, it is harmful to a family and to children to have a key member of that family abusing drugs. And if you treat it as a matter of public health, that's not a matter of public health. That's a matter of social health. That's very different. And you ignore it. You know, there's no public health apparatus that is well set up to, you know, make sure that individuals are productive and happy and good members of society and all that stuff. That's the criminal justice system's job. And so you lose a lot of those advantages as well.
That's right. Because they would, I mean, the police, well, I don't know. There's child protective services that can...
That's criminal justice. That's not public health.
That's right. It's a criminal justice issue. This resolution.
Boy.
Yeah, this is
If it just took the word illegal out,
we
would have a lot of great debates. And the illegal thing is going to make it really tough to...
Key debates.
It's going to be topic... It's going to be theory...
It's going to be tons of them.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to, you're just always going to have to deal with it. And you're always going to have to deal with the internal contradictions.
I mean, I think that the debate itself is kind of interesting, but I agree that it's going to get, maybe in the way is not the right term, but it's definitely going to occur with great frequency in many high level debates.
The other trouble, too, is the thing nowadays.
The other oddity is that it puts a burden on the negative to defend something, too. And so even if you didn't have the word illegal in there, I think you'd get a lot of theory when negatives started putting plans together in the NC.
Well, that's problematic in itself, too. I mean,
That was the trouble.
And then affirmatives counterplanning in the 1AR.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And round we go. So, and so that's the same trouble we always had with the negatively worded resolutions. Is that what always happened?
Yeah, well, we don't have those anymore, as far as I remember. I'm looking at the page here, the current topic page for the NFL. And, of course, there was the whole flap on public forum, which everybody else has talked about, and we don't need to talk about that, too. But I would point out to anybody who is seriously miffed off by the public forum thing, there is a button here you can click to submit your own ideas for public forum topics.
Well, they're actually now, pfdebate.com had the whole long thing about how they're now going to have some kind of preferential voting system for public forum.
Yeah, well, they're going to come up with a couple of topics. I read this.
I think that's very good.
And then we all get to vote on those two topics. So at least if something
were... And those two topics are only going to come from the one suggested by the membership, and which, as far as I can tell, precludes the sponsorship issue.
So, I mean, whatever one thinks about the topics and so forth and so on, the end result seems to be a better... I mean, I think the problem is simply, if you've got to come up with a topic every month, like Public Forum does, and they should have one every month, it's hard to do. It's one thing to get the, you know, the powers that be to sit down every year for LD topics, or, you know, the months that go into planning for the policy topic. But here, no matter how you slice it, because it has to be timely. Otherwise, there's no point to it. So they have to be thinking. I mean, the NFL is not the greatest organization for working with online resources, but this is a step in the right direction. Because, I mean, you know, once they realize that people have computers, then, you know, they can solve this problem pretty quickly.
And it's not really that hard to come up with that many topics. I mean, speaking as somebody who routinely writes about 100 extemp questions on a weekend, it's really, most extemp questions would make perfectly fine resolutions for public forum. I mean, it's not that hard.
Sure.
So.
To play devil's advocate about the sponsor thing, though, I mean, I've... you know, been very pretty vocal about against the idea of sponsors buying topics or whatever. But I mean, if you accept the premise that public forum was created to be a public friendly, like this was going to be the event we could put on TV. This is going to be the moneymaker for the NFL. This is going to be the college football of the NFL, right? It's going to be the thing.
There's a great moral comparison,
right? Well, it's going to be
sports fan.
It's going to be the event that's going to make sure that the other events can last. Then shouldn't we let it be sold to sponsors if the sponsor's going to pay $100,000 for a topic?
Yeah, but I don't know that I I mean, what does it mean that that event is what causes the other events to last? You mean at NFL Nationals or in general? I mean, because
they can do outreach, that they can do. I mean, that they can do the initiatives that NFL TV can exist. I mean, that wasn't a cheap site to build.
That's true. Actually, I was going to interject when Jim was making his unsurprising little jabs at the NFL, that NFLTV.org is actually a pretty amazing resource. I have to give them a lot of credit for that. That's a very well done website. But
yeah, that wasn't cheap to do. I mean, if having an event that we can say to sponsors, you can buy this, you can buy a topic for $50K. What's wrong with that? If it affords the NFL $50K that they can spend on building stuff like NFL TV, etc.
It's still educational curriculum. That's my main objection to it. It's a curriculum that is set nationwide that kids all across the country will be debating, and the effect that has on the public political discourse is profound. I mean,
one thing.
I consider myself to be a pretty left, you know, anti giant corporation, corporatist America, you know, that sort of person, but. Just to play devil's advocate, I see that it does. What if they left the wording up, and what if they had rules in place about what could not be debated? The wording would be would go to a wording committee that they couldn't necessarily that the pro side doesn't have to be pro whatever the organization is. Or whatever.
Well, even opening some questions, as we saw with the public forum topic on the Islamic Center, leads to poisoning the discourse. Like, even, you know, it doesn't matter how a certain thing is worded. If we get up there and we start debating whether or not women should have rights, that question alone can affect the discourse just by asking it. It says something about, you know, the world. And, you know, and the public forum topic for last April was a question about whether or not public employee unions were good for America or something like that. And we ran a critique against it because we said that this is exactly the kind of topic that moneyed interests would want debated in front of kids. And it doesn't help very much that at the very same time that was the sponsored topic, the Roop Foundation, which sponsored it, also sponsored a Cato Institute study on public employee unions. So the juxtaposition there tells you, you know, exactly what the problem is. And one of the great things to come out of this is, you know, here is a little bit of a card, if you will, that was Donald Rumsfeld testifying before the 9/11 Commission. And he said, "I used to think that the most powerful individuals in America was the person who could select the annual high school debate topic. Think of the power to set the agenda, to determine what millions of high school students will study, read about, think about, talk about with friends, and discuss with their teachers, and debate with their parents and siblings over dinner. Your commission has similar power, yada, yada, yada." That's the harm. That's, you know, you're taking something that is essential educational curriculum and has a profound impact on all of these lay judges and these people who aren't connected to debate, and forcing them to consider a question. If you can pick what that question is, you can have a substantial impact on this country. And by carefully picking what the question is, you can advance your agenda and your interests. And the very fact that these foundations were willing to do so in secret tells me that was what the agenda was. Because a corporation is not going to sponsor something just because they feel like it. They want one of two things. They want the aim itself, or they want the credit. And the fact that they weren't taking the credit is what raised a red flag for me.
One thing that I think is interesting that came out of this whole debate was that there was a slightly misinformed thread that started on pfdebate.com today that I noticed when I was taking a little break from tournament prep. And it was a line about I think they were comparing people who run their own topics at tournaments, like tournament directors who choose their own topics, to like a Tea Party movement, like rebelling against the NFL. And I had pointed out, and there was some discussion as well, that there have been times, you know, my own tournament way before I was at Bronx Sands, but other tournaments as well, there was a time in LD where a lot of tournaments actually chose their own topics. And I feel like PF, the stated goals of PF almost lend themselves to that, right? So it's perhaps not a terrible thing that different tournaments have different topics.
Yeah. I mean, to go I don't know if Cherian mentioned it on his on the PF podcast, but the Cordoba Initiative actually wrote the NFL after all this hullabaloo,
really?
and said that they were looking forward to the debate because they want an open and honest debate about the issue. But then they had to write back saying they weren't going to be debating it. But they, you know, they wanted it out in the open and stuff like that too. To me, the issue of sponsorship is just it's a sticky wicket. I mean, it's because certainly sponsorship does do some good things.
Sure.
And being able to control. I mean, maybe the NFL says, look, these resolutions are up for sale. We get to decide what the resolution is, but your name gets to be on it, like the September resolution sponsored by Coca-Cola.
And well, it seems that but it also seems like on the NFL website that's what LDs. I don't quite understand what Lincoln Financial Group's total sponsorship of LD debate is, because if you look on the website, it says directing Lincoln Douglas debate presented by Lincoln Financial Group. And it's the only one of all the events that says that of the main events. And then underneath it has the topic.
Well, Lincoln Financial is the name sponsor of the NFL tournament as well.
Right, I think sure.
That they are.
But this seems like something in addition to that.
Right, it is.
They've always sponsored LD. They've sponsored LD for years, even before they were the main sponsor of the tournament.
Yes, so they are also the sponsor. It would be no different if Colorado College, who does like what one of the things, or if the Roop Foundation became the name sponsor of the NFL. Then they would still keep Public Forum as sponsored by the Roop Foundation or whatever. But it would also just be the... But yes, Lincoln Financial also is they provide that scholarship money at the NFL National Tournament, specifically in LD debate too.
Yeah, and their only real role in setting any of the curriculum is that they have a couple judges who judge the final rounds at NFLs. They don't really touch it other than that. And even that's pretty controversial as it is.
Yeah,
they've done that, Mr. Beats. Huh?
We've lost. We've never won it. Yeah. We'll never win that damn sponsor.
All right, I've drifted off. I've just drifted back.
I apologize. I've been drifting from Big Bronx emails the entire time, and I apologize for that.
Before we drift again, I actually had something else to say about that, which is. I wonder also if the negative reaction towards the Islamic Center topic would have been in place had it not already been for the NFL undermining its legitimacy to set the topic.
Immediately
sponsorships.
I would have immediately emailed it, and I just
so
want to say I don't want to belabor the whole point because I know that we've been there, done that with this topic. But I do want to say this: some people interpreted the new resolution to be sort of like a thumb in your eye kind of thing, like take that back in the community. I know that was definitely not the case because I spoke with Scott One, I spoke with Cherian, et cetera, directly about the topic. I did kind of perceive when they were sort of telling me what they were considering that it would be more general topic about religion and academic discourse. But all that aside, to me, the issue was never really about it being a sensitive religious issue. It was about two things. It was about naming a specific group to be debated, which I think is exceedingly awkward and weird and very out of place with the way that topics have been phrased in the past. The analogy that I made on that point was that this, like, I can't imagine a civil rights topic saying something like black people should sit at the back of the bus or something like that, right? Instead, it would say something more generally about civil rights. That was part of my issue. And then the other part of the issue is, I must say, and again, I really commend the NFL for changing the topic. I know they're getting some heat for it now for changing the topic, but as a coach who has Muslim students, it is not a defendable topic. I appreciate that the Cordoba House wanted to debate it, but it is not you cannot defend that topic to students who are outraged, to parents who are outraged, and to administrators who don't want to deal with the outrage from the parents and the students. And for an organization that's supposed to serve and promote debate, I think that the original resolution was, while well-intentioned, certainly based on all the discussions I've had with the people who are behind that topic, it was very poorly conceived. And I do commend the NFL for changing their minds.
Well, that's not exactly what I was sort of driving at. Right now in the country, we have a situation where there are about four public forum topics being debated in November.
Sure.
I mean, we've got the one that the NFL released, the one the NFL released before that. Then there are people who are continuing with October, and then there are people who are doing December early, and then there are people who are doing their own topic altogether. And that's never really happened before. And I wonder what percentage of that is the result of this topic itself being odious, which I agree about, and what percentage of that is about the NFL having lost a little bit of its moral authority to set a topic by accepting those sponsorships in the first place.
I have a question about the topic. I'm just going to throw this out here. How many people really know about this controversy? Because sometimes I perceive it as being the controversy of National Circuit public forum teams. I could be completely wrong, and I probably am. But that seems to be the people who get very vocal about that issue. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't get vocal.
I mean, Cherian said that, like, every year they receive about 24 suggestions, and that the number of emails they get that he got was like 12. And so it was
12.
The new topic, then when they changed it or something like that.
Okay, yeah, because I know that they got like 150 emails about the original topic.
I think that it is often an issue because I think that local circuits will just change it. They won't make a big deal about it. They'll just do what they want to do. And when way back when the NFL sold the LD topic, and it was September, October, and it was about Paralympics, whether or not, you know.
Yeah, that was my senior year of high school, actually.
Yeah. Minnesota just decided that they were just going to debate whether or not the United States should have dropped a nuclear weapon on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Like, they didn't make a big deal. I mean, granted,
the
world is smaller now, and so, you know, there's the internet, and it's hard not to be in the national circuit because you go on LDDebate.org or PFDebate.com, and all the discussions revolve around the national. But you know, I don't think I think that it is the people that feel like they have influence over the NFL that are the most vocal with the NFL. And everyone else just sort of, they'll do what they want if they want to. If they, you know, they just don't, it's not as pressing to them, maybe. And I think that that's also because us national circuit people take it a little more seriously, for better or worse.
I can extend this. I mean, we have our own novice topic in the Northeast, and we run
because you think
once.
You do it better than the NFL does.
There's no link to whatever the NFL does at that point because the kids are new. So you're right. When people are on the national circuit, I'm going to go to Glenbrooks, and I'm going to go to here, and I'm going to go to there. So it does matter.
And having those topics create, in some sense, a national circuit, which is actually the great irony, right? Because the NFL is not theoretically the national circuit or whatever, but the mere existence of a national topic facilitates a national circuit.
Yeah, otherwise, I mean, we'd all be going crazy.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
yeah.
We're over the hour. We're over
oh
the
my
hour
goodness.
Mark.
Wow. Uh-oh.
And no one's listening.
Do they ever?
Nah, who knows? We don't want to look at the statistics. So this is good. John, have a nice tournament. I'll try to get there at some point.
So.
Now, this is going to be the only time all year until probably the TOC that all four of us are in the same place, right?
A little weird.
Torsen is going to be there, too.
Torsen is going to be there.
Joe Vaughn will be there, right? Wow.
All of our guest stars will be there, except for Fred Robertson, who can't make it this year.
He's always on Skype ever since we started him. He has been on Skype 24/7.
He doesn't know how to log off.
We should call him sometime and just freak the hell out of him. What is this?
Oh, God. All right. So, okay. Everybody, take care and see you next time.
Right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.